that was Argent's Bag from John McLaughlin's first album Extrapolation, recorded back in the beginning of 1969 in the UK, and an absolutely beautiful piece. And I have John McLaughlin on the phone from the south of France right now, and we're talking with him prior to his upcoming performance here in Bethlehem on Monday, June 17th. Welcome, John, and thank you very much for taking time out from your preparation for leaving, I think, beginning of next week for your US tour. Is that correct?
Well, you're very welcome, Bill. Yes, thanks for the opportunity to talk about what I do.
Well, it's
very important, too.
Yeah, it's our huge pleasure, and really looking forward to you coming to the Lehigh Valley, and we're proud that you're going to be in Bethlehem, having been at, I believe you're in Washington, D.C. the night before, and you're at the Bonnaroo Festival for a couple of days before that as well, right?
Oh, yes, yeah, we're down in Ashley, Durham. We're going to do the Bonnaroo Festival, so it's basically an East Coast tour.
Yeah. Well, we're proud you're coming to Bethlehem. But look, can we start the interview? Let's talk about your early career, your early days in England, recording Extrapolation, and then leaving.
Well, that one you played was from a long time ago.
Yep.
1968, that was recorded. I know. It's enough to make you feel old, isn't it?
Yeah, but it still sounds so fresh. That album
as long as it, yeah, well, that's very sweet. If it keeps it makes the test of time, then I'm very happy. Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, and you had an interesting range of musicians. Yeah, you had Brian Hodges on there because Dave Holland had already left to play with Miles. But you had Tony Oxley on there, who's really much more known as a free and avant-garde drummer, yet he swings like crazy on that album with you.
But that was later, really. But I met Tony Oxley when I joined Gordon Beck's group in 65 or 66, Gordon Beck Quartet.
Yep.
And Tony was playing. And Tony, in fact, was very influenced by Tony Williams, whom I discovered in 64 on that Miles in Europe album.
Yep.
And he was the only drummer I knew in the UK, actually anywhere in Europe, who could play in a way like Tony Williams. He had a wonderful thing. I know it became very free for him years later, but at that time he was just, it was wonderful spring he had in his playing.
Absolutely.
And anyway, when I met him from Gordon's group, and then when I had the opportunity to make a record, I hired him immediately.
Well, he fitted in beautifully, and of course you had John Sermon on baritone and soprano saxes.
Baritone sax player. Oh, yes.
Absolutely. My favorite of all time on baritone. And, absolutely superb album. By the way, any chance of you working with John Sermon again?
Well, we run into each other every now and then, but we've lost contact, really, to a great degree. I mean, years go by. I have more contact with Dave. But then I always had more contact with Dave because we lived together, actually. Just prior to him coming to New York, and me too. Actually, I moved to Belgium first before I moved to New York. That would be in the spring of 68. I moved to Antwerp in Belgium. From there, I moved to New York. And that they moved in the summer. But since we lived together, and he was in my group, actually. He was supposed to do the album. And then in New York, we both lived together too, until we both find separate places to live.
And it was Dave who invited you over, I think, right? Or Tony Williams invited you at Dave's instigation?
It was Tony Williams. He was playing bass with Miles, but we were so proud. We were enormously proud. A white boy from London, playing with Miles Davis and all that. Fantastic. We were just so proud. And then he called me one day, and he said, "I got somebody on the phone who wants to talk to you." And it was Tony. This would be in around October 68.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we'd recorded a jam session, Dave and me, with Jack DeJohnette.
Wow.
That would be also in sometime in 68, when he was over with Bill Evans, the pianist, mm-hmm. at Ronnie Scott's. And he loved to jam in those days. So we played together. And unbeknownst to me, he recorded it. One of these little mini reel-to-reel that they see in the old Mission Impossible movies. and when he went back to New York, and he was talking to Tony, and Tony must have mentioned to him that he was looking for a guitar player, because he was fixing on leaving Miles, and he wanted to form this group Lifetime with Larry Young. And Jack said, well, listen to this guy. I just played with this guy in London. And really, I got the gig, really, thanks to Jack. So but I got really lucky, too, Bill, because I arrived in New York, would be right after my birthday, I think, in January 69. And since Tony was playing with Miles, he had to finish 1 week off at the Club Baron in Harlem. I got to meet Miles that day, and because he was playing that night, I got to meet Chick and Wayne and Jack and you, of course. But Tony was still in the band, and that was the next day I saw Miles again. He says, "Okay, let's come to the studio," and we went and did In a Silent Way, and that was the biggest shock of my life, I can tell you.
So you arrived. You arrived intending to play with Lifetime and being the first gig. Was Miles there the first gig you did with Lifetime right before you did In a Silent Way?
No, but the thing is Lifetime. I mean, we play the Vanguard, the Village Vanguard. We played Village Gate. We did Ungano's, which was more Midtown. And we did Basie's Bar, which was up in Harlem. But we were really a club. And then we go out, you know, we do clubs around the states, the different states. There were more jazz clubs in those days.
Yeah, sadly.
But especially when we used to live in the Vanguard, the big combination for the Vanguard that year, 69, was Lifetime with Herbie Hancock Octet. And we'd open up to Herbie. And Herbie had horns. He had three front line. And so Miles used to come down because all his boys were there.
Yep.
You know, and we saw him several times there. But he used to come. Miles was beautiful. He used to come. He came to Mahavishnu Orchestra. I mean, on a number of occasions, he came to the. I remember when I did the first the premiere of Mediterranean. In Dorothy Channel Pavilion, Los Angeles, with the LA Philharmonic. He was there. It was fantastic. I mean, he was just, what a guy. I really miss him. Anyway, yep. Miles, of course, I was there with Tony. I was playing with Tony. But Miles kind of walked in, and I got the best of all worlds. I was playing with Miles and Tony.
Tell us a bit about the you went right into the In a Silent Way recording session with Miles and did some beautiful guitar work together, you and probably the three top pianists of the time with Herbie Chick and Joe Zawinul, all three of them.
It's very sweet of you to say that, Bill, but I was so nervous. I didn't know what I was doing. But I think, and Miles helped that along because the thing is, since he invited me just the day before, there was no guitar part. And In a Silent Way was Joe's tune, so he didn't have a guitar score. And so all they did when they got to the studio, they made me a photocopy of the piano part.
Wow.
So we ran it down. I mean, this is an anecdote I've told a couple of times, more than a couple of times. And we played it as Joe's arrangement, only Miles didn't like it. We tried it a couple of times, and he just didn't like it. And he turned to me, he said, play it on the guitar. I said, well, you want the melody and the chords? He said, yeah. And I said, but it's a piano part. I don't have a guitar part. And, but the chord is going to take me a minute just to... Is that a fact? And of course, I'm already sweating blood. I'm in the studio. That's the last thing I expected. So everybody's like, waiting. And Miles is looking at me. And then all of a sudden he says to me, play it like you don't know how to play the guitar. I mean, what a thing to say. I was already in a blue funk. And anyway, he said that. And I'm like, what does he mean? It's like a Zen master comes to a student and gives him one of these koans, like the fish in the trees, the birds in the water. What does it all mean? You know what I'm saying?
So you're on your own?
Anyway, yeah, of course. And, not only that, and the guy, I heard the guy say, oh, we never heard that one before, because he was well known for his cryptic request. And anyway, I just said, well, if I don't know how to play the guitar, I'm going to throw all the music out. I know E chord. Everybody knows the E chord. I'm going to play it in E with no harmonies and no tempo. I just threw everything out the window, and I played it like that. But I really didn't know what I was doing. I was in some galactic space. Well, I was going on pure instinct. In any event, they recorded. I mean, it was no rehearsal. We got to the end, and Miles loved it. He just loved it. I mean, I was so amazed. I was amazed when I heard it back. I couldn't believe it, because in a way, he'd given the tune to me and said, do it the way you want to do it, you know?
And you did. Your personality totally comes over, and it really sets the bed.
I know, but what a man.
Yeah.
And what a gracious human being just to do that. I mean, gee, I can never forget. I mean, he did, in more than one occasion, he honored me so much. I mean, I really, he actually became kind of my godfather. He made sure I survived, you know, I do gigs with him, but basically with Tony, I was making $20 a night. I mean, we were scuffling. Well,
wow.
Larry and me were scuffling. Tony wasn't scuffling so much. But anyway, you know, I see Miles just like that. I drop by his house, you know, and I say goodbye after hanging out, and he just say, yeah, are you eating okay? And he stuff a $100 bill in my pocket.
Wow.
He took
over as a godfather.
He was a real godfather to me.
There is there's a beautiful picture of you with him in that double compilation of yours, The Essential John McLaughlin. And in the liner notes, there's a magnificent picture of Miles with you, and you're both intently looking at the score. And I think it's at the recording session 4 in a silent way, but it really conveys what you've just been talking about.
Look, the two of us looking at a score?
Yep.
Does he have sunglasses on?
Yep, and a cap.
Yeah, this is from the Palle Mikkelborg album, Aura.
Okay, so that's much later. Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Because that's an electric guitar I'm playing. That's an old Gibson 58 Les Paul, beautiful guitar. And I was in Oslo with the last Mahavishnu, 1984, something like this, 85. I don't remember. Anyway, yeah. He called me. In my hotel in Oslo, I don't know how he found me, and he knew I was coming to Copenhagen the next day, and he said, I'm in Copenhagen recording. Come by the studio in the afternoon. And that was it. So I, you know, but that wasn't the first time he just found me in the middle of the night, you know. He found me in the middle of the night in New York, and he didn't even know I was in New York, but he found me. Anyway,
amazing.
So we went there, and that was just, I loved that album from Pally. Pally, of course, loved Miles.
Yep.
He just adored Miles. And the whole Aura thing is like a musical representation of Miles' name. It's just, you know, and Miles, you know, Miles is just genial. Okay. On that recording.
John, before you talk more about that, let's get some music in here, and let's take a listen to some of your contributions on In a Silent Way. And I was going to play the intro you do to the opening piece, Peaceful, where there's some beautiful rippling guitar work that really sets the stage for Miles's intro, and then maybe play a section of one of your solos from the middle of that piece, Peaceful, on the In a Silent Way, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a bit more about what you did after that album. Thank you. But that piece is just so atmospheric, and the combination of your guitar and the two electric pianos and the organ behind Miles and Wayne is absolutely beautiful. The fact you just did that in the studio is amazing.
Yeah, I'm still amazed about how that turned out, because it was so unexpected. But he must have known that I revered him, because when I heard Miles, when I must have been 15, and that was it. I'd heard bebop, and I'd heard, you know, the blues and the flamenco music and Indian music. I loved them all, but that jazz music of Miles was for me, and his concepts, the new conceptions, new forms, and new directions that he brought to jazz just floored me. I mean, I regretted there was never a guitar player in his band, but I regretted there was never a guitar player in Coltrane's band either. But those two guys, and Bill Evans, who was probably Miles' favorite pianist, I mean, I just followed them throughout their careers. But when I finally got to meet Miles in January 69, he must have seen I was just like in awe of him. You know, I revered him, because he was just, I mean, he was just a beautiful musician, but he was a great artist, you know, and he was so handsome and very elegant, and very eloquent, and funny, too. What a funny guy. So he must have felt that vibe from me. And yeah. I think, because he was such a sensitive human being. Maybe that kind of endeared me to him, I don't know. But in the end, you know, Miles will give you the musical test, and for some mysterious reason, in the silent way, I came through.
You totally came through. Let's talk a little bit about the period, the few years after that. You had an amazingly creative period then in late 69, in 69 and the early 70s. We talked then about with Miles then, and you did a few other albums with Miles. You had the Tony Williams Lifetime going. You did your own album, Devotion. You did My Goals mm-hmm. Beyond, which yes. I think led up to the formation then of the Mahavishnu Orchestra. So if you want to talk a bit about any of those particular bands, I think I'm going to play something from My Goals Beyond after we finish talking. I was thinking of playing your piece from that. But tell us a bit about that period.
Well, but just to make a brief resume, or by the time I arrived in New York in January 69, I'd already kind of gotten out of the psychedelic thing. You know, we were heavily into it. But, you know, between the UK and the US.
Yeah, and Devotion, I guess, was in that mode, right?
Slightly. No, I was already out of it. That was Alan Douglas who put that cover on there. That was I was already out of it. By 1968, I was out of that whole trip. But I must have said the psychedelic period was extremely fertile period for all of us. I mean, the Beatles, I mean, the music the Beatles were doing, I realized we're all in the same boat. It's just a different form. But I wanted to be able to alter my state of consciousness more naturally, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And already by 68, in early 68, I started practicing yoga and you know, learning how to meditate and trying to put it straight. And my love of the acoustic guitar, which you hear even as a track on Extrapolation. I grew up with the acoustic guitar as well as the electric guitar, and I always loved the acoustic guitar. When I did Devotion, actually Devotion was the first album I did under my own name in the U.S., that was for Alan Douglas. Mm-hmm. The thing is anyway, I went on tour and I'd recorded with Buddy Miles, whom I'd met during a Jimmy jam, the jam with Jimi Hendrix, because Buddy was in the band of Gypsies.
Yep.
But I got to know Jimmy through, of course, who's the drummer with Georgie Fame at that time? He was Jimmy's drummer too before in the Experience.
Right, Mitch Mitchell.
Yes, Exactly. Yep. We were both with Georgie Fame in the early 60s.
Yep. What a fine band that was.
Mitch loved Tony. So, you know, and I knew Mitch, so I introduced him to Tony, and then Tony introduced me to Jimmy. And there was this jam, which didn't turn out very well, because I had this big acoustic guitar that was just the volume. I mean, my guitar was like a microphone. It was just feeding back. In any event, that's why I met Buddy Miles, who I thought was beautiful. I mean, he was kind of the opposite of Tony. He just had some boogaloo. This boogaloo beat he had was just killing. So when I had the opportunity to make a record, I asked Buddy to do it. But while I was on tour, Alan Douglas came in, who was actually handling Jimmy at that time, not very well, I have to say. He kind of cut pieces up and, you know, and taped them backwards, and it was just a mishmash to me when I came. I was very upset with what he'd done. And I had a two-record album for which I made about $5. Anyway, enough said. Yeah. So I said, I'm going to make an acoustic album. And I said, I don't want to see you in the studio. And I don't want you to touch the tapes once they're done. I was really furious. And anyway, so I really loved the acoustic guitar, even though I was doing this thing. We were really rocking out. It was R&B and free and jazz with Tony and the Lifetime, and also with Miles. That was a pretty wild era.
Yes.
And I wanted to just bring the beauty of the acoustic guitar into it. And so when I did My Ghost Beyond, I did some, you know, just pre-recorded to myself with myself, and then solo guitar. And then on the other side, so I already had the idea for Mahavishnu. I had Billy, whom I'd met on Jack Johnson recording for Miles.
Yep.
That was Miles' favorite recording. Can you believe it?
Wow.
That's his favorite recording. But then you hear how he plays on that? And that whole thing was a jam anyway. Anyway, and Jerry Goodman was there.
Yep. And Charlie Hayden.
Dave Liebman, yep. Bottle Roy playing tabla.
Dave Liebman.
It was an interesting concept that My Goes Beyond, which I have to say has been re-released about 25 times, for which I've never, ever been paid. But, you know, I'm just like a lot of other musicians, you know. That's basically the story of life
story
in
of
the
life
music
for,
world.
For a classic album like
anyway.
That. I'm going to play you a piece, a segment. I'm going to play a segment from it. I'm going to play piece one and go into Dave Liebman's solo. By the way, Dave is local to here. He lives not too far from the station. I've interviewed him a number of times here at the station.
And
actually caught his brand new band a couple of weeks ago.
He's another one of Miles' boys too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, when you think how many people have been to Miles, how many people did he bring to the public eye? Incredible.
Almost
incredible,
everyone.
Huh?
Yeah, Dave's even an occasional jazz host here on WDIY over the last year. Once every 3 months or so, we get him in and he brings in some rare recordings and shares them with our listening public.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, really nice.
So yeah, he's beautiful.
Let's take a listen to My Goals Beyond and the piece one. At least we'll have a significant segment of it going into Dave's flute solo. Just before we do listen to piece one, time right now is 10 p.m. You are listening to WDIY FM Allentown, 88.1 FM and HD, 93.9 serving our translator serving Eastern and Phillipsburg, and 93.7 our translator serving Fogelsville and Trexlertown, and streaming on the web worldwide at wdiy.org. I will give you a weather forecast update once we finish this interview, and let's go into the piece of music, piece one from John McLaughlin from his album My Goals Beyond. We'll be right back. absolute beautiful piece that one is, and a classic album, and a more acoustic version leading up to My Goals Beyond, which we'll get to in just a second. In fact, let's talk right now about the Mahavishnu Orchestra. I think that's probably the best time. So, would you like to talk about the formation of the band? Obviously, you mentioned Jerry Goodman, who you already had on My Goals Beyond, and Billy Cobham on that album as well. Actually, those two have been performing. They actually performed in our area here together a few months ago. Any thoughts of you getting back together with them?
With Billy?
Yeah, and with Jerry?
Well, you know, I actually tried. You know, the only problem is the first Mahavishnu ended a little acrimoniously. It was all very silly, but you know, I mean, I was doing my meditation trip. I had my guru. I mean, I had not only my spiritual guru, I had Dr. Ramanathan, who was my Veena guru, you know, I was doing my meditation. I was into my thing, which I have to say continues to this day, because that's the way we have to discover ourselves. That's the whole point of life, is to find out who we are in this marvelous, mysterious universe. In any event, and I didn't ask them to meditate with me, or to do whatever, or to not eat meat or anything, but it got a little acrimonious, and Jerry and Jan stopped talking to me. Wow. And I said, well, you know, this is really silly, because if you're going to play music with me, that's speaking to me in a certain kind of way. So, what's the difference between music and speaking? And Rick, God bless him, Laird, the bass player, he said, "Yeah, why didn't you tell him? You're always telling me." So, you know, but that was it. And I said, "Well, okay. Well, the band, I'm not gonna live like this. You know, if you don't want to talk to me, then we'll just finish off the contracts, and that's it." And that's how the band ended. In the 1980s, I got a hold of everybody. I tried to get a hold of everybody. I said, come on, listen, let's just show that music is bigger than any ego, and let's play, you know? And I couldn't do it. It just wouldn't happen. It just wouldn't happen. I couldn't get Jan and Jerry. It was all messy. What to do? With Billy, I played with him about 2 years ago. That was very nice, but it was a spontaneous thing that happened in Montreux, Switzerland, when I got a call from Claude Nobbs, who left us last December. The founder of the Montreux Jazz Festival. Oh, he was a friend for 40 years, this guy. In any event, it was about 2 years ago or so. And I was on my, we go every year to Montreux, even if I don't play, there's always a jam, or I have a concert. But we go there for a week because there's hiking in the mountains, there's biking, and it's beautiful there, and there's concerts every night. So,
what better?
I was on the other side of the lake, Lake Geneva, with my family on bikes. I got a call from Claude. He said, "You want to play tonight?" I said, "Sure, I don't have a guitar though." He said, "I got plenty of guitars." I said, "Okay, cool." He said, "Listen, I'm going to call Billy. He lives like an hour from here."
Yep.
And because he had a group that was going to open up to Roxy Music, they got stuck in Montreal. Plane broke down. So me and Billy hit the stage that night, and we played about 45 minutes, just the two of us.
Wow.
Just the two of us. Anyway, and we played some of those old tunes, and they were still in memory. Can you believe it? It was beautiful. It was just great, spontaneous kind of get together. But as a band, I don't think so. I think it was part of an era, and it was part of that whole movement.
Yep.
Of that fusion that Miles began. Let's spell it out here. Mahavishnu was just another aspect of it, but Miles really began the fusion. With In a Silent Way and a Little Way, but certainly with Bitches Brew.
Yep.
And Jack Johnson. I mean,
you were on both of those, of course, right?
We just jumped on the bandwagon. That's it, really. But actually, it was Miles, believe it or not, who told me to form the band. We just finished a gig outside of Boston. It must have been in November or October 1970. And I was with the band. He was with Gary Bard. Keith Jarrett was in the band. Michael Henderson. Jack was in the band. But it was at the end of the gig, the guys had gone. There was just Miles and me in the dressing room. And out of the blue, he turns around to me and he says, "John, it's time you formed your own band." I said, "What? You know, are you kidding?" He said, "No, it's time you formed your own band." And he was such an honest man. I took it very seriously. And from that point, my vision really was born.
So not only was Miles looking after and making sure you were fed and surviving, he was managing your career for you.
He was, I mean, what he did, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, I ended up being with CBS, the same label as him. We shared, I will never be able to pay my debt to him. There you go.
Yeah.
But I have to say a word for Tony here, because Tony was the revolutionary drummer of the latter part of the 20th century. He was just amazing. Him and Elvin Jones, what they did together was just phenomenal. But Tony, I mean, and being so young, I mean, he was 17, 18 when he hit the Miles in Europe.
Yeah.
I mean, what the way he played the drums. Again, it's this new concept, it's to bring a new form, a new way of thinking, looking, feeling, and expressing to jazz music. And Tony really, really, he was phenomenal. And it was just this morning I was talking about the Trio of Doom with Jaco Pastorius. There was another guy who was a revolutionary on the bass guitar. Because he came up to see me in 1974, sorry. And he drove up from Florida, and he found me rehearsing in the SIR in New York. And he said, "I'm the baddest bass player of all." I said, "Oh, really? I had Ralph Armstrong on bass, who was a great bass player in the second Mahavishnu." And I said, "But let's play." And we played at the rehearsal. So I mean, even Ralph was amazed. Narda was playing, Narda Michael Walden. I mean, we just, he floored us. And I said, "It's beautiful." And I called Tony that night, Tony Williams.
Yep.
And I said, "Tony, you got to listen to this guy. You got to, you know." And I think from that point, they kind of got together. But it was a short while after that that Joe Zawinul just hired him for a weather report.
For weather report, yep. And then,
because already Weather Report and Shakti started doing, was a principal group for me from 1976.
Tell you what, John, hold a segment, let's play some more music in, and then we can get to Shakti. Let's listen to something from Mahavishnu Orchestra, because we've done the talking there. I think I'll play the title track from Birds of Fire, which was your second album with Mahavishnu Orchestra, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Good choice with that one, of the title track of Birds of Fire. You're good with that?
I love them all, Bill.
There's so many. I've been struggling what to decide to play here, but let's take a listen to Birds of Fire.
Okay.
From Mahavishnu Orchestra, John McLaughlin's legendary Mahavishnu Orchestra. We'll be right back. That was a band, and your new band certainly has some flavours of going back to the original Vishnu Orchestra in there. But before we get to your new band, let's just talk a little bit about the time after the Mahavishnu Orchestra. You got to talking about Shakti there, so let's talk about Shakti a little bit. You mentioned Coltrane earlier, and of course you did that beautiful collaboration with Carlos Santana on A Love Supreme, playing all Coltrane music. Maybe we already talked about Aura, I think, and if you want to throw in anything about your later work with Miles in the 80s as well.
Just to go back a little bit, Bill, that period with Carlos, because that happened in the middle of the Mahavishnu era, and about 18 months or 20 months, almost 2 years ago, Carlos and I, we played 40-year reunion, and the DVD actually of that concert will be coming out. We did it in Montreux, and it was of course Claude Knobs, whom I just spoke about, who organized it there, and I was very happy because Carlos, he's very dear person and a great guitar player. And something happens when we play together. And you'll hear, or you'll see and hear when the DVD comes out next month. He's been a very special person in my life. But Shakti actually began already another parallel to Mahavishnu Orchestra, already by 1973. I'd been studying with my Veena guru, Dr. Ramanathan, and at Western University in Connecticut. And then I'd already met Zakir Hussain in 1969. We had already become friends. And we played together for the first time in 1972, just the two of us, for Ali Akbar Khansad, what a wonderful solo player. He had this Indian school in California. In any event, to make a long story short, at Wesleyan, I met El Shankar, Dr. El Shankar, the violinist, and we started to hang out together because I love violin. What a violin player he is. By this time, Zakir and I, we got to know each other very well. We were playing together. We were hanging out together. And then I found this violin player. And one day I said, you know, we're going to have to get together. But Zakir was in California. We were on the East Coast. So I got my guru's mridangam player, Dr. Ramanathan's mridangam player, Ramnath Raghavan. And that would be in 1973. And we started doing these mini concerts with tabla, mridangam, Shankar on violin, and me on guitar. And I loved it. I really loved it. And as time went by, in a way, Shakti became more and more important to me. The whole of the Indian music is wonderful in its inclusivity. Mm-hmm. It's inclusive of every aspect of the human being, from the most capricious to the most sublime and spiritual. And by this time, of course, Coltrane, who had a very important influence on me, endures to this day. He himself studied with another one of my gurus, Pandit Ravi Shankar. I mean, and even Coltrane, is no coincidence that he called his son Ravi. And so I got to study also in 1974-75, I got to study Indian theory with Panditji every time he came to New York, which was wonderful. In any event, by the end of 75, I could see this Mahavishnu form at that time, it kind of exhausted itself. But at this also, I'd become so much involved playing with the Indian players because it was so challenging. Boy, they can play, those guys. Yeah, I mean,
Zakir is amazing.
They're amazing players. And it was such a challenge to me. I thought, I've got to, you know, on the whole spiritual dimension of the music, it's very important. And so I got criticized terribly by the record company, my agent, my manager. They said, well, you idiot, you know, you've got this great successful band and you're going to sit on the carpet with these Indians playing acoustic guitar. And I said, I know, but, you know, I just got to assume the consequences, that's all. And, but I think the fact that it's still like today, because in 6 months, we'll do a major European tour again. So I think it's a testimony to its
longevity and its value, right, and its freshness. Oh, the Shakti was absolutely beautiful, and I'm glad you are still propagating that. And I hope you'll come back to this area with Shakti as well. It'd be really great to see you performing in that environment again.
There are something, and we have this singer Shankar Mahadevan in the band now, who is so unbelievable. This guy is just so we're like two percussion, electric mandolin, electric guitar, and vocalist, and it's just so marvelous. They are just marvelous. What can I say?
Yeah, it's a mandolin in place of violin. Mandolin in place of violin in this version of the band.
Yeah, well, actually, we tried to get in '97. Zaki and I, we tried to get Shankar, but we couldn't find him. We actually could not find him, in the sense that he wouldn't answer any phone call or any fax in those days.
Interesting.
Anyway, no, it's all for the best. It's all for the best. But the group, The Fourth Dimension, this is a group that began actually about 9 years ago at the invitation of the cultural center in La Réunion, which is a French island near Madagascar.
Yeah, absolutely. I play music from there on occasion, and from Madagascar and the Comore Islands, which are adjacent to there. But by the way, John, just let me interject that The Fourth Dimension is a band that will be with you at the concert coming up here in
absolutely.
The Lehigh Valley at Music Fest Cafe on Monday, June 17th.
Yeah, and you have to see this band. And not only you have to hear it, but you have to, as I said, it's been going about 9 years. Yeah, there have been a couple of personnel changes, but the way it is, the formation today, it's just wonderful. They're wonderful players, but
tell us
great spirits too, you know what I mean? I mean, there's a wonderful spirit in the band.
The drummer is an Indian.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mark Montazier left us a couple of years ago, and Ranjit came in, whom I've been playing with for about 10 years, but mainly in India, just basically in the festivals. But in 2006, he recorded Floating Point with me, which is an album I really love. And that was made in India with Indian, mainly Indian musicians, but jazz musicians, you know, I'd be great players. Oh my, and Ranjit's killing on that. And after that album, I guess it was just really a matter of time before he came in the band. And now he's in with Etienne Mbappé on bass.
Yep.
From Cameroon.
From Cameroon, yeah.
And we've got another Yorkshire guy on keyboards and second drums, if I dare say second drums, because he's an amazing drummer, Gary
yep.
Husband.
Yep.
But what a keyboard player, what a pianist. And yours truly. So I really can say to anyone who's listening, please come down and listen to it. I don't think you'll regret it.
You had an amazing 4.5-star review in Downbeat from Bill Mulkowski, I think, who basically said the passion and the energy of the original Mahavishnu Orchestra is back on this album. A fair comment?
Yeah, absolutely. Not only that, it's because that band is part of my personal history, Bill.
Yep, of course.
You know, the Mahavishnu Orchestra, Shakti, the things I did with Paco de Lucia.
Which we didn't even talk about.
And
right.
Aldi Meola. They're all part of my personal history. But every now and then, and there are pieces on the new record. It's been out of quite a few months already. But there are pieces that remind me of the Mahavishnu days. I mean, Echoes from Then is just, I mean, the title is that. It's really, when the music came out, I'm saying, wow, this is like Mahavishnu music. Because I never know what I'm going to write. I have to wait until it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes out and it tells me what it's about. And for me, it was like, this is out of the Mahavishnu book. Also, not only that, we're playing tunes from the 80s. We're playing, we'll be playing even, I think, one of the old Mahavishnu tunes, in addition to music from the 80s, 90s, 2000. We even have music that's never been recorded, but that's another story.
How about?
In any event, I just hope, well, you'll be there, Bill.
I will be there, absolutely. I'll be there. I wouldn't miss it. Any chance of playing anything going all the way back to Extrapolation?
To Extrapolation?
Yeah, playing Arjun's Bag or Binky's.
That's what I don't. The thing is, over the years, I've got the problem is not having enough music, is having too much.
Too much, of course.
And really, I mean, we have a lot of music in the repertory. Yeah. The tough job is really saying, okay, we're not going to play this tonight. We're not. Oh, really? Oh, man, come on. You know, I said, but, you know, but if we have to play that, then I have to take this out. Oh, man, no, don't take that one out. It's a tough call, really.
It's a problem.
We got too many hours, many hours of music.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Okay.
Anyway,
we are looking forward to it.
I'm sure we'll have a nice show for you.
Okay. Will you be playing a little bit of acoustic in there at all, or no?
No.
No, I won't. No time for that.
I know it's true. In Mahavishnu, we did some acoustic, but until now we haven't got that together. But
a little acoustic interlude
maybe,
would be really. Anyway,
yes, you like the acoustic part, yeah?
I do indeed. Tell. You can tell.
And I was just listening to "Time Remembered" day before yesterday. Do you know that record?
Not the so well.
The music of Bill Evans on for six guitars.
I don't believe I've heard it. I've heard of it, but I don't think I've heard it.
Oh, shame on you,
shame
Bill.
Shame on me, okay.
No, this really, I mean, the music is sublime, but it's really not just a homage to Bill, it's a homage to the guitar. And it's true, I love the acoustic guitar. I will do something with the acoustic guitar again, I know it.
All right, excellent.
But don't blame me. Don't be angry with me if I don't play in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Okay. You mentioned one of the pieces from the new album, and that's what I did intend to go out from the interview with your Echoes from Then, which, as you mentioned, definitely has shades of the original Mahavishnu Orchestra.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So just before we go into that, are you happy or is there a different piece you'd like me to play to go out with? Your choice.
I'm sorry?
Are you happy with we go out with that piece?
With the album?
With Echoes from Then.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I love that piece.
Good. That's what we'll go out with. So, John, thank you so much for spending all this time talking with me. It's been a huge pleasure talking with you. And be even more of a pleasure listening to a week on Monday.
Well, I hope so. Yep. Yeah. Well, I'll get to meet you.
Absolutely.
That's even nicer. Yep. Great. All right, Bill. Nice to hear you.
Thank you very much indeed, John. And Monday, June 17th, here in Bethlehem at Music Fest Cafe. Thank you very much indeed, John. And I hope the trip goes well and there's no travel hassles.
I'm sure it will.
Thank you so much, and let's go out with from your new album. Now hear this, and let's go out with the piece Echoes from Then. Thanks. Bye bye now.
Thanks. Bye bye.
Bye bye. We'll be right back.